Thank you. Well, thanks. I know I should say something. I always do this against my better judgment, but I have no choice. I mean, I also have nothing to say. That's why it's against my better judgment. I mean, it's wise to keep your mouth shut when you don't know what's going to come out of it. On the other hand, I have to say something because, as I mention every time I do this, if you don't say anything, there's tension in the crowd, and then it becomes hostility, and then you're doomed. So, I have to do something, and you know, this is its own kind of discomfort, but it's nothing compared to how tense it gets if I don't say anything at all. If I could continue, maybe I could introduce a tune or something, but I also hate to do that. I have an animus for any of that kind of stuff. You know, number one, those questions, how are you doing, are you feeling all right, you know, all that nonsense. I don't care, and neither does anybody else, and it's none of my business how are you feeling. And the other one is, this tune comes from, I can't stand that either. But given the job that I've got, I'm kind of stuck. Man, it's just so wet up here. Can I get a towel or something? I'm going to break a finger. How do you guys do it down here? Man, it's hard. Take that. Well, no, that isn't, it isn't me. It's the humidity on the strings. A few things I care about. Thank you. That I care about. I met Dizzy Gillespie in Italy a few years ago, and all we talked about was sleep. How to get it? Why musicians aren't allowed any? And where you go if you think you have the chance? So I'm going to have to introduce this tune. I have to, because, why? Oh, because the lyric is really a little hard to stomach. I like everything about this tune, even parts of the lyric, but you'll see, the lyric is too much. And it was written for a wedding by Eddie Reeves and Alex Harvey. The two friends of theirs were getting married. Two friends had been together and then apart and then together and then apart and then together and then apart for 10 years or more. They decided that that meant they should be together. They got married. They were. What it meant was they should have been apart. Says, baby, what you doing? I've been wondering where you've been. Now and then, I think about you and me. No use fighting about things we can't recall, 'cause it don't matter now at all. Just come on in, baby, we'll laugh and sing and we'll make love. Let the telephone ring. Ring, ring, doorbell ring, come on in. I got Mel Blanc on the radio. What a guy. I'm glad you came around. I've been feeling down talking to Tony and Mario. You know they make good conversation. Still, it ain't no consolation. shine, cause I got love. Baby, I'll give you some, and if somebody comes, let the doorbell ring. So I was playing in Portland, Maine, and I don't know when it was, a while ago, and I was at the sound check, and I did something I never, ever, ever do, and but I was at the sound check, you know, tuning up, doing whatever you do, and this guy showed up, and he said, "Hey, my girlfriend and I are coming tonight, and I'd like to propose to her after you do that song you do called Rings, and, you know, if I could just run up and could I do that?" And I said, "No, that's just way too corny. I couldn't do that. Please." And forgot about it. And and so that night I was up there, and you know, when you play, you get stupid. There's no way around that. That's another requirement, because you have to have an empty head, or if you think about what you're doing, you can't do it. So and things fall out of your mouth that you'd later regret, and not that much later either. So I was up there and I did that tune, and you know, and I mentioned that it did take place in the sand, and that they got a divorce after 3 years, and that all they had left of their marriage was this song that had been a hit 3 times, simply as a reminder, a goad to their shame, a reminder of their pride and their blindness. And I said, "And please welcome Joe Blow," whatever the hell his name was. And this guy came up to propose to his girlfriend, and he brought her with him. That was a clue right then that I'd made a terrible mistake. And I went over here, and he got a hold of this thing. He'd never had one. That was never had. And he would not shut up. And I stood over here, the consummate professional, being, you know, completely out of luck. And she stood over here, and he droned and babbled, and it's just this awful stuff. And you began to notice that she was seeing things in him that he had hoped never to reveal to her. Really. And at the end of all of this, you know, and I was trying to think, what do I do here? You know, what would be right? I mean, what do I do? And finally, and I couldn't think of anything, finally it ended. And he said, so would you marry me? And the whole audience went, ew. They said that Louise was not half bad. It was written on the walls and window shades. And though she'd act a little girl, a deceiver, don't believe her. That's her trade. Sometimes a bottle of perfume, flowers, and maybe some lace. Men brought Louise 10-cent trinkets. Their intentions were easily traced. And everybody knew at times she cried. Oh, but women like Louise, they get by. And everybody thought it kind of sad when they found Louise in a room. They'd always put her down below their kind. Still some cried when she died. This afternoon, Louise rode home on the mail train, somewhere to the south, I heard them say, too bad it ended so. Too bad she had to go this way. And the wind is blowing cold tonight. So good night, Louise. Good night. Thank you. would love to get a different color on that thing. I feel like Dracula up here. That's it, huh? You got a lighter one of those? You know, like... I know I could have gotten into this. Okay. The other thing there. With, well, I don't know. Turn them all on. Jeez. What do you do? I don't know. What do you want? Take care. That's good. Okay. Shut up. That's good. I wrote this tune more or less with Steve Warner for a duet record that he put together. It's called Don't Call Me Ray. He had a son whose name was Ryan, and I kept calling him Ray, and he kept saying, "Don't call me Ray." When we were done, he asked for an autographed photo of myself and his dad, so I signed it, "Dear Ray." It'll teach him. Thank you. a tune written by Carlo Bley. It was I heard it when I was still a trombone player, and I was living in Oklahoma. I was spending part of my childhood there in Muskogee. It's also where I got my first job, which was working in a morgue at the Veterans Administration Hospital. My father worked there, so I had an in. It was illegal for me to be there, of course, being underage and everything else, but I thought I wanted to be a doctor. What I learned was I wanted to be Igor. And once I found that out about myself, I realized that, you know, there are better things than self-knowledge. What's wrong with a life spent in ignorance? Wait for these. This is going to go on tonight because these guitars haven't seen this sort of damp for a while. End of the night, you'll be able to drive a truck under here between the strings of it. Goes like that. So there I was, and I played my first professional job, which was the annual Aunt Jemima Pancake Breakfast, which was downtown at the sort of city auditorium, which was run, by the way, I'm not sure if it was run then by this guy, but by Merle Haggard's brother-in-law, which is why I wrote Okie from Muskogee, in case you ever needed to know that, which of course you didn't. And you can, by the way, David Lindley, you know, when you get a tune stuck in your head like Silent Night or something and you can't get it out of there, Louie, the way to get rid of, David Lindley showed me this, is to play it backwards in your head, and it'll, being directly out of phase with the original, it will erase itself. It'll work. And so, is this going to work? I didn't do too well on the SATs either. So anyhow, I defined that job as my first professional job. I was in a trio. It was a trombone, Jack Hanna on trumpet, you know, two children, and then Jack's dad, an adult who knew better, or actually knew more than I thought, on baritone saxophone. We were paid in sausages when we were done. It wasn't until years later that I realized that Jack and I were paid in sausages. I've needed the union at other times too. They're just about as effective then. Anyhow, we went home. Jack's father put on a Jimmy Giuffre's recording of this, which is Carla Bley's composition. Jimmy Giuffre's arrangement was for clarinet, piano, and bass. I fell in love with it, haunted me for years. Later on, I tried to play it. I couldn't. I hired somebody else to play it, to arrange it, a guy named Tim Sparks. He arranged it, and I finally now can play for you Carla Bley's Jesus Maria, an arrangement for guitar from an arrangement for, by Tim Sparks, from an arrangement for clarinet, piano, and bass by Jimmy Giuffre, of an original by Carla Bley for trombone. That's the truth. By the way, I'm the only one who likes this tune, so if there's anything you want to do, now's the time to do it. Thank you. You know what? There's a door back there where you're keeping me. I don't know where Zeke is or anybody. If you open that door and then the door to the back, out into the yard there or whatever, the rhododendron patch, there's a breeze that will come through. I remember opening it and getting blown in the face. But somebody will have to kind of keep an eye on things back there because, you know, I have the family jewels and everything back there. I don't know if you, well... Thank you. Now I know why we had that light. It's the coolest light, isn't it? And it was only one light. Well, let's make them suffer. I have to look my best. I'm going to play one more, and then we'll take a break and go jump in the pond or wherever that is. I want to say before I do this that I have dreams about breaks. Usually I don't take them. Because in my dream I come back and you don't. I would appreciate it if you did. This is a tune. I can feel that breeze. Can you feel that breeze? Boy, that'll help. Could kick those windows out. I used to tour Yugoslavia, and I did about five or six tours of the country. I'd play in Pula and Split, Ljubljana, Belgrade, a couple other places, and I loved it there. It's a beautiful place and weird audiences and beautiful halls. And my first time there was with Paco de Lucía. We'd been doing a double bill through the rest of Europe, and Paco had been there before, so he was worshipped there, as he is anywhere he has touched down. He's a monstrosity of a musician, and so the local, this is a long time ago, the local party brought out all of the local luminaries, the local arm of the party brought out all of the local luminaries to meet and greet us in Ljubljana, and we didn't want to see them. They didn't want to see us, but nobody had any choice, so we stood in the green room and told each other how nice it was to be together like this, and wasn't this wonderful, and blah, blah, and lied our way out the door and onto the stage. And it was a wonderful night, and we got off, and we were told by these two guys in leather coats who were telling everybody what to do that we were now going to dinner. Okay. And off we went to some residential spot, and they pounded on the door and dragged two people out of bed and told them to make dinner for all 12 of us. You know, there wasn't any food. It was just somebody's house, and I still drank then, so I had something to do, and a couple other people in the group did. And they, like I say, there were 12 of us, and there was a mountain climber who'd been to Everest twice, a heart surgeon, a mathematician, you get the picture, and Seika Tavchar, who was the, or Tavchar, who was the token artist of the bunch. And I was sitting next to her, and after a while, peering through the fumes of my slivovitz, I said, "Well, what do you do exactly?" And she said, "I'm a lithographer." I said, "Oh, a lithographer from Ljubljana." And she didn't smile, nothing. Once again, he whips out his rapier-like wit. And I said, "Well, could I see some of your lithographs?" And she said, "No, you can't." She said I had a show in Paris 10 years ago, or 2 years, or one. Who knows? I've forgotten. And I sold all 10 of my lithographs. I said, "What do you mean? You must have a couple laying around." "My God, huh?" She said, "Well, I print one litho, and then I break the stone." And I'm giving her a lot more English than she was using. So she made this, she gestured to make sure I understood. One litho, destroy the stone. Now, these stones are, I've researched this, are huge. They're hard to get. They're expensive. It takes a couple people to move them around. And Seika wasn't that big. She was flat broke like everybody else in the room, in the country. And I said, and it, so I didn't understand. I said, and, you know, except that I was now talking to a lunatic lithographer from Ljubljana. I said, "Why?" And I didn't want to ask her this, but I did. I said, "Why do you break the stone?" And she said, "That's none of your business." So I was, this is a terrible night. This is a terrible story, by the way. And so I left the country, basically. You know, I played a couple. I got out. But the tour was a success. And so I came back on my own for 5 or 6 years. And always the tours began in Ljubljana, which is the Hollywood of Slovenia. So you can generate publicity, which was then and is now a really bizarre concept in Yugoslavia or whatever the hell it is. So I was standing in this same beautiful green room in this beautiful hall there. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful city, for that matter. And Seika showed up. She said, I can't hang around. My father just found his way home. He's sick. I'm taking care of him. I said, okay. And she left, and I left the country. I came back a year later, same green room, same Ljubljana, same dressing room. Seika showed up again, so I said, how's your dad, picking up the conversation where it left off a year before? She said, well, he's dead. She said, if you like, this is a terrible story. I'll come by the hotel tomorrow and show you the things that he's done in this city. So the next day we went down to what I think is the Slava River. I never really learned the name of it. And stood next to a bridge that her father had designed and built. He'd been an architect and an engineer. And on one side of this Slava, there were three roads. And in the course of Seika's father's bridge, they became one road on our side of the Slava. So when she told me he'd been arrested, I knew exactly why he'd been arrested. But I didn't want to say, no, you know, geez, no wonder. I mean, look what he did here. So instead, I said, well, what'd he do? And she looked at me like I was from another country. And she said, He didn't do anything. He was just arrested, that's all. We weren't told why he was arrested. We weren't told where he was being kept. We weren't told how long he would be kept. And when he got home, she said, the previous year, he'd been in prison for 26 years. And that's when she found out that he'd been imprisoned across the street from her apartment house. And he was in a basement cell. And every night he could look up through a little slit window that he had and see Seika, who was 3 years old the first year of his imprisonment, and her older sister playing on the balcony. And he watched them grow up from down there. So that's why she breaks the stone, I am sure. And that's why I wrote this. I have one of her lithos, and I don't know where she is anymore. We'll take a break after this, and then I'll come back. Thank you. So Furry Lewis do this next tune. It's been done a billion ways. It's PD, and you can do whatever you want with it. He did a very up version of this thing, and in the middle of it, he flipped his guitar over and started pounding on it while he sang. And when he flipped his guitar back up, the pickups had fallen out. Could not hear a thing. It was the first clue I had that you can have too good a time up here. Corina, Corina. ever since you've been gone. I got a bird that whistles, I've got a bird that sings, I've got a bird that whistles, a bird that sings. But if I ain't got cold, life don't mean nothing. I'd walk the world on the bottom of the sea. I'd walk the world on the bottom of the sea. 'Cause I can't when she talks to me. Corina, Corina, where you been so long? Corina, Corina, where you been so long? And I've been worried about you ever since you. Feels a lot better in here. This feels less like a sea anemone and more like a guitar. This is called My Aunt Frances. It's come on, I know you're there. You're like, okay. My aunt, of course, but I got one of these tuners, you know, it tells you when it thinks you're in tune. It has not a doubt in its mind. That's how the Third Reich got started. Excuse me, but this is really worth it. See, what I have here is it's not just the humidity. There's something on this guitar called polyphonic pickup, and each one is suspended. It sits underneath a little bridge, so there's no pressure, no compression, no, which is great. On the other hand, that little thing it sits under likes to go every time you move it. So let me play this. It's... Do we have the same bottom we had before? Seems a little different. Okay, I know you're doing something there. I can't see it, though, because I'm blinded by the light, you know. Wrapped up like a douche in the... Thank you. I was up in North Carolina a couple of days ago. There it is. And was stopped by a policeman, and it reminded me of the last time I was stopped by one in South Carolina. I had stopped doing this next tune. Because I'd gotten sick of it, mainly. But I missed it in a way, and I was trying to do a tune by the same guy called 3 Days in a Country Jail, which is basically about the consequences of having become involved in a kangaroo court, which I'm learning is something that's less and less familiar to the general population. It being the sort of thing where the town turns its hand to extortion, brings you into jail, locks you in there, and you buy your way out. I was warned about this constantly when I was in the Navy by my teacher at sub school, in the first part of sub school, a guy named Wines, Chief Wines. And he never told us a thing about submarines, but he told us a lot about kangaroo courts. So when this guy stopped me, I was on the alert, and he walked. This guy, the cop who got out of the car, was all cop, as my father might say. I asked him, "Well, never mind." And he was a neck with some feet on it. That was about it. He was a cartoon of a policeman. I asked my friend Sam Eddy, I went to high school with, who's been a cop now for a long time, if there were any more of these guys, you know, that he said, "Well, yeah, I don't hang around with them." So this guy kind of came up to the car, took him, you know, half an hour, and he almost immediately started talking about following him into town for my speeding ticket, for a speeding ticket, so... There it was, a kangaroo court. I was going to jail. I'd be there for weeks. And I decided that I would have to make friends with this guy. I'm sorry that I couldn't think of something more adroit than that, something a little more, you know, like stepping on the gas or something. But I couldn't. It was the best I could come up with. You know, musicians aren't that well socialized. They spend most of their childhood all by themselves, you know, in a little room somewhere going, tink. One of the worst things you can do is put someone like that in front of an audience, you know. So I thought, well, I'll make friends with the guy. You know, it's kind of a 2-3-year-old, six to seven-year-old response to this thing. And I said, "What's this blight you have in the trees here?" Because, you know, half of them were just dead as doornails, with a phrase that Dickens invented, by the way. We tend to think it's everywhere all the time. It wasn't until Dickens came. Also, cool as a cucumber. That was Dickens. It looked dead as doornails. You know, half of them are dead. The other half looked fine. And there was one of the longest pauses I've ever endured. And during the pause, I thought, I don't think he's going to be my friend. And at the end of this, he said, he looked at me and he said, "Every winter the leaves fall off the trees. Every spring they come back on." No kangaroo court. You can't get money out of an idiot, I guess. I'm the guy who didn't marry pretty family ground. Educated, well-intentioned, good girl in our town. I wonder where I'd be today if she had loved me too. We'd probably be driving kids to school. I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. All of my good times, all my running around. One of these days I might be in your town, and I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. Seen the lights of cities, and I've been inside the doors, sailed to foreign countries and walked upon their shores. I guess the guy she married was the best part of my luck. She dug in 'cause he drove a pickup truck. And I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. All of my good times, all my running around. One of these days I might be in your town. I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. Tell you just how beautiful she was. Everything it takes to get a guy like me in love. Lord, I hope she's happy, 'cause she sure deserves to be, especially for what she did for me. And I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. All of my good times, all my running around. One of these days I might be in your town. I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. Play a couple more things and then get out of here. This is something that this knocked me out the minute I left. Did a lot of people. The minute I first heard it, I was living in Cheyenne at the time. My folks moved every couple of years, and I usually trailed along behind them. And the way you make, you know, speaking of how you get socialized, the way you did it then was you'd get beaten up. You'd come into town and you were new. You'd get pounded to a pulp, and then everybody, you knew everybody, and that was. And it was okay, but I had gotten too gregarious for my own good, I think, and or at least we'd moved too much for my own good, and I was tired of it. So I decided to join a gang, and there was one gang of which I was aware in Cheyenne. It was a Pachuco outfit that hung around in front of a pawn shop off of Pioneer Avenue down near the train depot, and I approached these characters one day, and they immediately just shooed me away. I was an embarrassment. I was wrong in every possible way for their gang, not to mention my bicycle, and that was the end of it. But I noticed for the nanosecond that I was there that they all had the same tattoo, which was a crucifix with a dot at each end. So I went home, got some India ink and a needle. I knew how to do that. And began with the dot, thinking that if I had one of these tattoos, how could they tell the difference? I'd just be one of them. I was a dim bulb in the marquee of childhood, to paraphrase Chet Atkins. After getting the dot, and I'm glad I started with the dot, not something more elaborate, I stopped because it hurt, and here was this thing now on my hand. So I spent what time I did spend down there across the street now on my bicycle, and the owner of the pawn shop played records through a speaker that he hung over his front door, and this guy was short. It was the first, I didn't even know what this stuff was, and I didn't identify it until I'd grown up years later. But he was playing real early Professor Longhair stuff, all this New Orleans second line stuff, and frog, you know, all kind. And one day, this tune by was written by Santo Farina, the Farina brothers, who were Santo and Johnny, who went on, by the way, to do now in the twilight of their career, which was immediate. To do covers of Cowsills hits in Italy. You can buy their you can buy their cassettes in truck stops around Milan. They were geniuses, but that didn't make any difference, I guess. I'd like to thank you for coming out and, you know, squeezing into this, what was in the beginning, kind of a warm place. And I appreciate your attention, and thanks for listening. And, you know, I was trying to think whether I have played here before. I think I have. Haven't I been in the Flagler at one point or something like that? Something. You know, you kind of... Kind of lose track. So it's nice to come back and to find out where you were. Thanks again. Thank you. Good night. I'm supposed to, it's traditional to come out and explode now, but I already tried that. So I'd like to. Big hit for the Sutherland Brothers and Quiver in Britain. It didn't do much here. It was a vocal. I don't know the words. It's been an instrumental ever since. Drive safely. Thanks a lot.